body lost, look in, they get found. Know it when they hear the champion sound. Works like a magnet on the people all around. Know it when they hear the champion sound. Anybody loving music up in your town. Know it when they hear the champion sound. Love it when they hear the champion sound. Need it when they hear the champion. Watch out. Take it on
a wild dream. He was the mysterious member of IU's undefeated national championship team in 1976. And the underappreciated one. Growing up in the basketball hotbed of Anderson, he used the game as a form of escape from a crowded, chaotic house. He played for hours on the playground next to his home, and when he really wanted to get away from it all, he ran for miles and miles. He led his high school team to the Final Four of the state tournament, and he starred in the Indiana-Kentucky All-Star Games. By then, he had drawn the attention of IU coach Bob Knight and accepted a scholarship to play in Bloomington. He did it all at IU, playing point guard, jumping center, defending the opponent's best score, and generally figuring a way to enjoy operating below the radar of one of the greatest college teams of all time. He didn't get to enjoy the thrill of the championship game victory. He was too busy laying unconscious in a hospital bed. But he got a ring and has the lasting memories of everything that came before it. He went on to have a 7-year career in the NBA before he abruptly quit and jumped into the real world. He's been a coach, a businessman, a motivational speaker, a mentor, and a whole lot more since leaving the game, and he's not slowing down. Let's check in. I'm Mark Monteith, and I'm going one-on-one with Bobby Wilkerson.
This is One-on-One with Mark Monteith on 1070 The Fan. Brought to you by Georgetown Market, Indy's family-owned natural food store since 1973. Movie Time Video Productions. They make your memories last forever.
All right, today's One-on-One comes to you from the fourth floor studios at MS Communications on the downtown circle. We're here with one of the IU legends, Bobby Wilkerson from Anderson, Indiana, one of the many great players to come out of Anderson. Bobby, you look like you can still play. You know, you look like you're at playing weight. Are you staying active?
Yeah, I'm staying active, but you know, my mindset is not to play.
I don't blame you. And you just got inducted into the Indiana Basketball Hall of Fame, so yes, that's sir. Great. That's a great way to finish off your basketball career in Indiana, I guess.
Yeah.
I'm glad to talk with you. I've talked with Quinn Buckner. I've talked with Tom Abernathy. I've talked with Kent Benson for this show. I haven't gotten Scott May, and I'm told I never will. And so I'm glad to get you. We have four-fifths of the starting lineup of the 1976 Indiana team that went undefeated, of course, and won the national championship. So really glad to finally get a chance to talk with you. Let's tell your story. It's a good one, I know. You're born in Anderson, right?
Yes.
One of 12 children?
Yes, sir.
12 children. How did your dad support that family? How did you guys survive?
It was tough, but you know, I just thank God that I was one of the younger ones, you know. So I have 6 older brothers and 2 older sisters, so
okay,
and the distance in between is like 15-18 years, so it made a big difference. They also helped out,
yeah,
my dad. So it was tough, but it was still we didn't know we were poor, but you know it was still, we had a loving family.
When you're growing up, you had obviously brothers that were much older and out of the house, I guess. But how many people were in your household there that you're living in, and what was it like?
It was a lot. I mean, you know, especially it was probably maybe 4 to 5 or 6, or count my mom, 6 or 7. So, but you know, we were always somebody over there. There was always, you know, from them, their kids and my older brother's kids, and so it was just a way of life. It was just a way of life. And it was nothing bad about it. It was just a way of life. You know, that's all you know. But I just had the freedom to be able to go play. And that's what I enjoyed. So I didn't really concern myself with that. I was outside every chance I got.
Yeah, oh, absolutely. How many people did you share a bedroom with growing up?
I don't know. It might have been 4 of us in one room and one bed, and we was on the floor or on cots and, you know, that sort of thing. So
you kind of learned to cooperate a little bit. Oh, yeah. Share. And
you learn a lot of cooperation, and you get a lot of direction too, as far as being told what to do, being one of the younger ones. So you didn't have a choice. You did a lot of work, and you know, whatever they wanted you to do, you did it.
Yeah. What did your dad do?
He worked at construction.
Okay.
He worked at construction.
Now, growing up in Anderson, it's not difficult to fall in love with basketball, particularly when you were there. It was such a hotbed. Tell me about your beginnings in the game, you know, where you first started playing and how your, you know, desire to play grew.
I started playing when I was about 7 years old, and I started playing, and I, you know, coming from a big family, I loved the time by myself. So I spent my time, instead of dealing with stuff with the family at home, I would always go to myself. I was kind of a loner, and I would just go play, and I enjoyed being by myself. And so I started just playing all the time. I just fell in love with having that control to be out by yourself and doing something that don't take a group, you know. Because when I go home, there's a group of people. And there's always, you do this, you do that, and I can get out there, and then I'm my own boss, and I can play. And I, you know, I love basketball. And so I just fell in love with playing the game and not necessarily dreaming of anything else, but just in love playing. And it was a way of life for me. It gave me peace. You know, especially from a big family, there's a lot of noise and a lot of stuff going on. And so I really enjoyed that. That was the aspect of starting that young. And it just grew, the passion just grew for the love of the game and to get better and to try to play. And you had to learn on your own. You know, there was no camps. There was no, none of that stuff these kids go to today. So it was just a matter of constantly, you know, watching TV and then going out and playing and try to emulate what you see on television, that sort of thing.
So basketball was an escape for you?
Yes, it was.
Yeah, and were you going to a playground someplace, or where were you?
Well, we stayed right next to the playground, the school, the elementary school. And so I would just go out there, and I had the four goals, and I had freedom. I had my own courts, and when everybody left, I still had my own courts. So being living next door, I had freedom to go and play all the time.
Yeah. So when you're out on the playground by yourself, who are you daydreaming about being? You know, what's going through your mind? Were there certain players or teams that?
No, not really. As I started playing, it was more of I just enjoyed the game, and I would go watch players, and I, you know, see guys on TV and college and pros, and maybe I would like how they dribble the ball, or maybe I would like how they pass or how they shoot, and I would go out and try to emulate, you know, the shots, and just, you know, I love to run, so I just enjoyed running from a young age. I just love to run, and I would just run up and down, ball handling and shooting. I would talk to myself and have a game going for hours, just enjoying the game of trying to continue improve on what I was doing. And, you know, I just enjoyed it. And my mother didn't understand, you know. I never forget, in the summer, we get out of school and she's, you better not leave this house till I get home from work. And when she leave out one door, I'm right out behind her the next door because I'm going to play. You know, and I said, I'll deal with the consequences. I got a lot of beatings for that. But after years went on, she just gave up, said, you know what, this is a losing battle.
And so you're running up and down the court on the playground by yourself, playing a whole game in your head, huh? Being two different teams probably and different players. Were there certain teams or players that you were at that moment?
No, it was just playing, fictional, and then having a shot clock in my head, you know, the last second shots and that sort of thing, or counting down, coming down, and, you know, taking the ball out, and 10 seconds to go, and I'm calling the play as I, you know, in my mind go down and looking for the last shot, you know. And then working on ball handling and just dribbling and running, because I from a young age, I believed in running, conditioning. I just loved to. From that age, I knew that if I can outrun you, I can get you.
Well, speaking of running, somebody told me that you would run like 10 miles, 10 miles out, 10 miles back, that kind of thing. Was that what you were doing?
I was running probably about 15, 20 miles.
Really?
Yeah.
You mean
every
total,
day.
Every day?
Yeah. Close to about 30 miles a day.
Were you, was that a way of burning off stress, or was it just because you loved to run that much, or why were you doing that?
I just loved to run. I would run, and I would run. And my brothers, even as I got older, they didn't know where I was running. They didn't believe I was, you know, because we stay in Anderson, and I was running to Pendleton, which is about 18, 19 miles.
On country roads?
No, right on the highway.
Right on the highway.
Old 67.
Yeah.
And I'd take that and going up there, and my brother, so he got in the car and followed me one day. And he came back. He said, that boy ran up to something wrong with him. But it was a piece for me, but I just enjoy, you know, being by myself. I enjoy, that was my way of getting out of the hectic home. And it was just peace, you know.
Yeah.
You don't get a lot of peace when there's a lot of kids, and then, you know, grandkids are coming over, you know, my mother's family, and, you know, and my brothers and my family, and then our cousins are big families. So they all had 10 to 12 kids. And so it was, And I just love peace.
And you ran to get it.
Yeah.
That's great. So did you run cross country in high school?
No, I didn't.
Why not?
I just concentrated on basketball. That's all I did. I was going to play football 1 year, my 10th grade year, but it got cold out there, and the coach wanted to send me in, and basketball season started that Saturday. I said, "Coach, I can't go in there." You know, I'm sitting there, the whole game is cold. I think we're playing against Noblesville, and my feet was freezing. Oh, man, I'm not going in. Basketball season starts tomorrow. So I didn't go in. He was mad. I don't care. And that was the end of my football career.
Wilkerson gets bused to a new school, but then leads its basketball team to the state finals when one-on-one continues. Welcome back to One-on-One. I'm Mark Monteith. Bobby Wilkerson was all set to go to Anderson High School until the authorities declared he had to go to Madison Heights. It turned out to be the right place for him. When you first started playing organized basketball, junior high school, whatever, were you one of the best guys from the very beginning?
I was one of the worst.
Were you?
Yeah, I was short. I was really short.
Really? You grew late, huh?
I grew late. And I loved to play and loved to dribble the ball, but I wasn't, you know, the best. You know, there was guys who were more advanced at that age, and I never forget, you know, and they were good, and I just kept playing, and I kept playing, and I was really a small guard, you know, and I just kept playing and kept playing. I didn't know I was going to grow from my ninth to the 10th grade year, because before that, I was just a small runt, just a guard, and then I grew 8 inches in one summer.
Wow. What summer was that? What
From
age?
From my ninth to the 10th grade.
Between ninth and 10th grade, you grew 8 inches.
So when I hit high school, because high school was the 10th grade, and that summer I grew, and I took revenge on everybody who took advantage of me at that point.
Did you go through an awkward stage? Usually when somebody grows that fast, they're awkward for a while.
No, I didn't go through that because I was always running and doing those things before. So as I grew, you know, it was normal. You know,
must have been a shock to your mom who suddenly has to – find new clothes for you every week or every month or whatever.
It wasn't a shock. I just didn't get new clothes.
We wearing hand-me-downs or do you
yeah,
have
I just,
older
you
brothers?
Know, older brothers, you know, and then I just had to roll them up because, you know, we just couldn't afford it. And I wasn't really worried about the clothing. That's one thing, even all the way up, I never worried about what I wore. I knew who I was. Plus, I was always by myself. So I didn't, and I had an attitude growing up.
Did you?
I would fight. So I, and if someone fought me, they'd have brothers and cousins, and it's a long line of us.
So you got in some fights in high school, huh?
Yeah.
Like in school or out on the playgrounds?
Playgrounds.
Did you have any embarrassing moments in basketball? For example, Troy Lewis from Anderson Tombe, his very first organized game, he got the opening tip and ran down and shot a layup at the wrong basket. Yeah, did you have any moments like that?
Not really. I don't remember any. Yeah. I just always remember playing and from elementary on. I never forget in elementary school, the elementary coach, Mr. Arnold, he wanted, I was so good in basketball, I was just now developing. And he went to my mother and wanted to hold me back because I was so young. And I wasn't definitely not going for that. And thank God my mother, you know, my older brother stepped in and said, no, we want him to be with the kids he grew up with.
Yeah.
And because I was like a year younger than most kids.
Yeah, because you were born in August, right?
Yeah.
So that meant, you really could have been with a class behind you.
Yeah. Yeah. And so I didn't want that. But he went and he said, you know, we like to keep him back because he's so good in basketball. Then he told her, he said, there's one thing about him. Now, he does have an attitude problem. She said, oh, I know that. I'm dealing with that every day.
So you wind up at Madison Heights, though, and I guess there was the split there. When did you go from Anderson school system to Madison Heights?
That ninth to 10th grade year, they changed the boundary.
Okay.
And the boundary, and it's awful funny, they changed it the year I'm going to high school. The boundary is right my street, and I'm living on the
wrong
south side
of the street.
Yeah, because if not, I would have been going to Anderson with all my other friends.
Right.
And they bussed us all the way out to Madison Heights.
Oh, you're part of bussing, huh?
Yeah.
Wow. So the same summer that you grow 8 inches, you go to a different school.
My other friends. Yeah.
Had to be difficult, though, first year at Madison Heights?
No, it wasn't difficult because I was really hanging by myself anyway. So I would see them after school anyway. So
that was another chance to get away from everybody.
Yeah. But it was. It was different because of, you know, the race stuff that was going on at that time, and the race riots. We had a riot at the school, and I just never got involved in that because it was just foolishness to me.
Yeah. So you stayed away from that element. And the fact you were such a good basketball player probably helped you, at least, and made it easier for you to be accepted and overcome a lot of the silly stuff.
And I was the blunt of a lot of it, too. But, you know, I just was not a reactor to that because at the end of the day, I had friends who were white and my coach, you know, Mr. Buck was a great coach and we had a great relationship. And so I didn't deal with that. Other people dealt with it. Other African Americans dealt with it for whatever the reason. But for me, you know, it was not that deep.
Well, at Madison Heights, you got to the Final Four, the state high school tournament. Your senior year, you lost by 8 points to Gary West, which went on to lose the championship game to Connersville.
Yeah.
What particular memories from your Final Four experience? That game that you played. Down in Bloomington.
In Bloomington. What people don't realize in the regional, the semi-state, I got hurt, and I had cracked ribs during the state tournament, and nobody never knew, and I never said nothing, and Coach Buck never said anything. So I was really under the weather a little bit, but I still played. But it was a great experience because we didn't have a lot of talent.
Yeah,
we came together as a team, which, you know, is a pleasure, especially when you talk about Indiana basketball, you talk about team basketball. We were a team. We came together as a team, and people look at us like whatever, but when we got out there, you know, I mean, we beat some good teams. We beat Ken Benson in Newcastle. I'll never forget playing against them.
Yeah.
And we put it on them, and Trent Smock in Richmond, But, you know, it was just a great team. We grew over the years. We went from sectional champs to regional champs to semi-state and get to the state. I mean, we had a career that was with a bunch of guys who just came together and we listened to Coach Buck and we played hard. And we made a difference. We really put Anderson on the map as far as leaving there and then going on and really doing something.
Yeah. Yeah. You say you had cracked ribs. Did that occur during a game?
During the semi-state.
Semi-state?
Yeah. Up in, I think we were playing up in Fort Wayne.
Okay. On your left side or right side?
Right side.
And that's your shooting.
Yeah. So
side.
I couldn't.
It was you weren't shooting many jumpers. No. Though, huh?
You know. Oh, but man. We didn't make excuses. You know, they beat us and that was a good thing. I mean, it happened and the experience and you know, I was going to IU. So.
Yeah. Well, you made the Indiana All-Star team for the series with Kentucky your senior year. Phil Cox was Mr. Basketball. Your future teammate, Tom Abernathy, was on that team. Bruce Parkinson, who went to Purdue. Al Fleming, who went to Arizona. You guys dominated those games with Kentucky. You won the first one 96-72 in Louisville and then 115-86 back in Indianapolis. And you were the leading scorer of those games. You had 12 in the first game and 24 in the second game. Obviously, your ribs had healed by then. You were 12-17 in that second game. So that had to be an eye-opener to people because you weren't a great scorer in high school, I don't think. And I don't know how well-known you were throughout the state.
I wasn't well-known throughout the state, you know, because we was under the radar and they would talk about everybody else. And I was a scorer in high school. I averaged about 19, 20 points a game.
Yeah.
But I had to do everything else too, you know, rebound, play center.
I should say you weren't really a shooter. You weren't hitting jumpers. You were an athlete. You were taken to the basket.
Everything. What I remember about the All-Star game, that's my first time that ever played a left-hander, Phil Bond. He was a left-hander
Bond,
guard. And he was going by me, and I just couldn't. I hadn't played a left-hander that was that quick. And I was frustrated that first game.
Yeah.
And I made up in my mind, I'm going to get him when we come to Hinkle. And from the jump, it was my show. I took it the whole game. I put on a show. I really did. It was amazing. That was one of the greatest performers. And Coach Knight happened to be at that game, too. And he was like, whoa, this is a side we didn't see of him. that's the determination of, you know, me not playing well. I didn't think I played well, even though we won. I was happy we won, but I was frustrated. I was like, no. And right away, I started concentrating and thinking about playing this guy and how I'm going to play him in the next game. That next week, Indiana had I wish I could get that tape of that game. If they had kept it.
Yeah, I know. So many of those games were great, and there's nothing existing. You know, there's nothing about them. You know, Jordan McGinnis scored 50-whatever points in 1969 in that game, and we can't see it. So at that time, though, you had already committed to Indiana.
I hadn't committed, but I knew that I wanted to go to Indiana.
Okay.
And that was a good thing. I didn't ever tell anybody, but I knew. And Coach Buck, he was pushing me to go to Indiana because he went to
Indiana. He had gone to Indiana, yeah. Well, there was a pipeline from him to Bloomington.
Yeah, and I think he had to try to convince Coach Knight. And so it was interesting, but because I was going to go and play, but I knew that wherever I go, I was going to make a difference. You know, but I really wanted to go to Indiana because my family is close by, and every game is on TV. So my family, they wouldn't have to worry, and friends, and everybody could see me. And I knew, and I wanted that because the only way you can get that exposure is go to a school that can give you that exposure. Then you have to take advantage of it.
Did you take any other recruiting visits? Did you?
No, I visited a whole lot because remember then it was open. You didn't have no.
Yeah,
I visited so many I was tired.
You know? Did I go to Hawaii? Yeah. Did you go to warm weather places?
I went to warm weather, and then also because of my academics, I went to junior colleges.
Yeah,
I went to Vincennes, and they were really trying to get me at that time.
I bet.
I didn't want to go. I wanted to concentrate on my grades because I never really learned how to study until I got to IU, and I needed that year to learn how to study, to learn how to do homework, to learn how to go to the library. I needed that, and I knew I needed that.
Mm-hmm.
And so I made the decision that I was going to go Prop 48.
Wilkerson heads off to Bloomington into a brave new world when One-on-One continues. Back on One-on-One, Mark Monteith here with Anderson native and former IU great Bobby Wilkerson. He took Bob Knight's scholarship offer and ran with it, but it took a while for him to figure a way to fit into such a regimented system. And when he did, the Hoosiers were on their way to a national championship. Well, you're in a good recruiting class, to say the least. Quinn Buckner, Scott May, Tom Abernathy were in that class. Kent Benson follows a year behind you. Mm-hmm. So you had the nucleus for a historic team, really. And you and Scott May both set out that freshman year for academics to get eligible. Were you happy with your role down there? I mean, you weren't a scorer. You were a defender. You and Quinn Buckner, probably the best defensive backcourt in the history of college basketball. I mean, really, he's 6'3", you're 6'7", both really athletic and physical. Were you happy with the way you fit into that group, or were you wanting to do more offensively? Or
I was not happy in the beginning. I really wanted to quit and go somewhere else because I was frustrated. And the frustration came because I had so much talent that I didn't really want to learn the fundamentals. You know, Knight was trying to teach me, you know, you need to do this. You know, you need to get down in a stance. You need to. And I was so quick and so athletic, you know, I just go and I could do the same thing. So it took me a while that second year. I went through a whole, my sophomore year was just, at the end of the year, I finally clicked in. You know, and we won the CCA years because only one team that year was going to the NCAA out of the Big Ten. And we ended up having to go to the CCA or whatever.
Yeah, it was
We won that tournament, and I played well. And I finally clicked in that year, at end of halfway during the season, it clicked in what he was talking about. Because I was just getting tired of him hollering at me, first of all. You know, and then, you know, Quinn had been there the year before because he was eligible his freshman year. And they went to the tournament.
Right.
And they got beat by UCLA, I think it was.
Yes, it was.
Yeah. And so Quinn had that year experience. So me and Scott were coming in. And then Scott was designated as a shooter. And so my role, you know, Laskowski was there. And so I'm coming in playing behind him. And I'm frustrated. I'm like, you know, I know I can outplay him, but it took me that year to really get into the fold of understanding what Coach Knight wanted. And I had to make a decision, you know, either I'm going to do what he wants or I'm not. And I decided that, you know what, I like playing with these guys. I made this choice and I'm going to change. And that summer, I made a commitment to change.
Mm. Did you come close to leaving?
No, I was talking about it, but my mother's like, you're not coming home. So I didn't have nowhere else to go.
You would have been homeless, huh? Okay, so the summer after your sophomore year, you say you make that commitment to kind of fit in better there?
Yeah, I made the commitment based on now I have a year under my belt with Coach Knight.
Yeah.
I knew what he was like. I knew what he expected. And so my philosophy was now to make him change, make him like me. And so and how was I going to do that? I was going to become, I would never get tired. I was going to run the whole summer. I was going to work on my ball handling, work on my shooting, decision making, work on my defensive stance. So I spent that whole summer just improving. I said, because when I come back, there's going to be no doubt that I'm going to be one of the best players he'll ever coach. And that was my commitment.
Given your personality, you say you're a loner, you know, you're an individual. Seems to me by your nature, you're not trying to always fit in with the crowd, you know, what's popular. Was it a difficult adjustment playing for Coach Knight because of that? I mean, you know, because he's the authoritarian. He wants total conformity, that type of thing.
Yeah, it was. And I had to learn, because once I spent that year with him, I knew what he was like, and I watched. And my after my sophomore year, even after that summer, I made a commitment that, you know, I'm not going to talk. I'm just going to, you know, I'm not going to show expression. I'm just going to work. I'm just going to work. If he compliment me, if he gets mad at me, don't matter. I'm just going to work. I'm going to acknowledge what he says. And that's how I made it through, because my personality is different than Quinn and Scott's personality. And everybody saw that even on the court. But that summer, I knew that I had to be that much better, where there's no doubt, where he can't say nothing negative. And I made a commitment. And when I came back, it was from the running, it was like I could go the whole game without getting tired. I could play the whole game and then play another game. But that was based on me, you know, and I could guard anybody, and I knew how to guard anybody. So I based my ability, and I changed it up that, you know, if I'm going to play the whole game, I got to play every position. Because if I can guard Kent Benson and I can guard Scott May, if somebody get tired or get hurt, I'm in the game still. And so that's why I learned to play every position and learn how to. And that's how it helped me academically, because I knew that I had to remember every play off every option off every position. And that helped me memorizing my homework and doing my studying. And so that was my whole philosophy. That's how I end up improving. Because of, based on me determined to change and make a change. And then I knew how to do the change. Because sometimes you can have a change in mind. If you don't know what to do, you're in bad shape if you change at all. But that year with Knight helped me, and I knew him. I knew what he expected. And I knew it was perfection is what he expected, and hard work, and to acknowledge that what he says that we understand. And especially me, because he stayed on me a lot. And I think because he saw the talent, but he wanted to know what I would be willing to change.
Well, you win the national championship. You beat Michigan in the final game in Philadelphia at the Spectrum. But you get injured right away. You know, you get knocked unconscious. And what you told me a little bit ago, you know, you were injured in the Final Four in your high school career, true, as a senior. So you have these two great moments and you're injured. and you're not even there for the final game. I mean, how early in the game was it? I know. First 2 minutes, and you got hit in the head. And then you're knocked out and taken to the hospital, right?
Yeah.
Were you able to watch the finish of the game?
I didn't see anything. The only thing I remember is when Coach Knight and John Havlicek came in after the game to the hospital. And I had my uniform still on. I guess the nurse had told him I wouldn't let him take it off. And I just asked him, did we win? And he said, yeah. And that's all I remember.
How long were you unconscious?
I have no idea.
Yeah, a long time apparently. Huh?
Yeah, and I was up there for about 2 or 3 days. So.
Yeah, you didn't come back with the team, did you?
No.
That must have been crazy. I mean, this dream you've had, this goal you've had all year, then you're not even at the game, basically, and you're told that you won the national championship. What was that like?
It was bittersweet. You know, I was glad we won, but it didn't sink in. And then when I went back, I didn't go right back to school. I went home, you know, see my mom and them. And when I went down there, you know, it still was kind of hard. But, you know, we had the banquet and everything. And it
helped. You must be thinking, did that really happen?
It was surreal, you know. And then when we had the banquet and everything, that kind of helped me because, okay, this is for real. And so it was still – I have a tape of the game, the recording, and I never listened to it. And
you've never watched it?
No.
You've never watched that final game against Michigan?
I never watched it.
Wow.
I never will watch it. And I have the tape, too, the announcer, and he's announcing the game. And
so you have the audio tape and a video tape or whatever.
I never heard it. Never. I just keep it.
But you don't want to watch it? Not even curious?
I just keep it. I was part of this great team. And
why don't you want to watch it?
I just have no interest in watching it. Yeah. You know, I know we won, and I got my ring, and and life was good. So.
Wilkerson tells his best Bob Knight story when One-on-One continues. But first, here's Bill Fleming's description of Wilkerson's injury in the NCAA championship game against Michigan.
And now, pay close attention to this next play. Number 32 of Michigan, Wayman Britt. They head down court. After he shoots, his elbow accidentally smashes into the left temple of number 20, Bobby Wilkerson. Wilkerson dropped to the court, unconscious. As we can see close up, Wilkerson had been knocked cold. He lay motionless under the Michigan basket for a long time, more than five heart-stopping minutes. Fear quickly spread through the crowd of more than 17,000 people in the Spectrum. Wilkerson definitely appeared seriously injured. His teammates were visibly worried, so were the Michigan players.
We're back on One-on-One with today's guest, Anderson native and former IU great Bobby Wilkerson. His NBA career didn't quite work out as he hoped, but he played seven seasons and left on his own terms. From there, it was on to the real world, where he went back and got his degree from IU, coached, started a business or two, and began mentoring kids. He's not done yet either. Give me your best Bob Knight story, the one you tell to friends or family people as you look back.
The best one is when we were senior year and we was there for Christmas vacation, Christmas break, and we was getting ready for a tournament. I think we were getting ready to go to Hawaii for the Maui Invitational. And, you know, they have us move out the dorm because they closed, you know, we were all scattered, and they put us all in McNutt Quad or Foster Quad at that point. So we had to move out, but we had practice. So we had practice, then you got to go move your stuff back into the dorm and then make it to the airport. So we go at night, we had practice, and then we had to run and try to hurry up and get our stuff. He knew all this. And so we're getting back, and we get to the plane. So we're trying to pack our stuff. Hurry. We're all in different spots and trying to get back. And so by the time we get to the plane, we're late. And so it's me, Quinn, and Scott. We were late. So we knew that, okay, well, he ain't going to leave without us because if we don't go. But we weren't trying to be late. We had practice, and we were trying to get, you know, get our stuff and
scrambling,
get back. And so we knew we was going to catch it. So we get to the airplane, and he was upset, and he cussed us. He went up one side. And when he got to Scott, he said, Scott, and you with that damn mustache on.
Suddenly the mustache came up, huh?
We couldn't wait till we got on the plane. And he ripped the whole way. He just went off the whole time on the plane to Hawaii. We were teasing Scott. I said, Scott, it's your fault because you had that mustache.
Now, you had the afro. You were the one afro guy with the big afro. I'm surprised he didn't bring that up.
Well, he didn't bring it up because I knew how to comb it backwards so it wouldn't be out here. So I comb it so it looked like I got it cut. I kept it. So, but he got on Scott about that mustache. We teased him, we laughed. He said, Scott, it's your fault. You know. But and Scott and Quinn had a they were the captains. They had a great relationship. They were the spokesman. I was not a spokesman. I was just a worker, and I just kept my mouth quiet and did my job.
That's a good one. That's a good one. You averaged 7.8 points as a senior. Mm-hmm. You know, obviously you're the defender, you're the point guard, you're not the scorer, but you're the 11th pick of the draft to Seattle in 1976. Were you surprised by that?
No.
Yeah, did you kind of expect to go somewhere around there? And there was no draft show on TV, then how did you find out that you had been drafted?
Bill Russell called. I was at home, and I was at my mother's in Anderson, and I was down the street at the courtyard playing, and one of my brothers called down here and got me. And I ran down the middle of the street. It's about two blocks. I ran home. He said, hi, you know, I'm Bill Russell, head coach of Seattle Supersonics, and we drafted you first round, 11th spot. And I said, okay, thank you. And he said, well, we'll be talking to your agent. And I said, okay. And then I hung up the phone, went back, and finished playing.
That was it, huh?
And then some of my friends, my family, when I came home, they were sitting on the porch, so we was, you know, just laughing and talking. And I went to take a shower, and we just sat out on the porch.
Yeah. You didn't go up and get a cap from the commissioner, nothing like that?
No,
you know,
no interviews,
just a phone call.
None of that.
Well, Scott May was the second pick of that draft, and Quinn Buckner was the seventh pick of that draft. A year later, Kent Benson goes number one. That tells people what a great team it was. Tom Abernathy went in the third round and played, I think, 4 years in the league.
Lakers.
Yeah, Lakers and Golden State and the Pacers.
And then Wayne Radford went.
Wayne Radford from that team played for the Pacers. Yeah, so that tells you what a great team it was. I remember going to – I was a student at IU a year behind you, and their first game you played for Seattle against the Pacers at Marcus Square, I came up and talked to you, did a story. I mean, that had to be a moment. You're coming back almost home as an NBA player. I'm sure you had a lot of family and friends there from Anderson. That had to be a good moment for you.
It was, because now everything had evolved, from college and the pros. And, it was just amazing, because my brother, he even told me recently that they didn't have a clue to what I was trying to achieve, because I never talked. I never told them.
So they had no idea you wanted to be a professional basketball player.
Because I never told anybody, even going to college. They didn't know I wanted to go to college, but I think that's, me just keeping it, because there's a lot of guys who talk about what they want to do and they never achieve it, And for me, it was, just go about it and give it a shot, give it your best shot.
Yeah.
And so coming home and then the joy that my family and high school and then all my friends and Coach Buck and everybody could be there. Those are the moments that, that's what life is about, to be a blessing to maybe inspire another young man and another young man or a whole town to get up and continue to follow their dream.
Yeah, your nickname in college was Bland, right? From Bobby Bland, the blues singer?
Yeah.
Was that common among your teammates or was?
Yeah, they call me some everything, but that was because I liked the blues. I listened to him all the time, and I think Tom Abernathy started that. He called me Bland all the time. Yeah. So, but we had fun. We're still good friends today, all those guys.
I was going to ask, how often do you talk to those guys?
Well, I had lunch with Quinn a couple of weeks ago, and I talked to Scott, and I talked to Benson all the time. Abernathy, I think he had a death in his family, and I haven't talked to him, but I'm going to talk to them again this week. But we always talk and try to get together, and because I'm the only one that was out of state, so when I come in, we try to get together. And
we'll catch up on what you're doing now here in a minute. After your rookie year with Seattle, you're traded to Denver, right, part of a five-player deal, a pretty big trade. You're in Denver for a couple years. I guess you could say those are probably your best years in the NBA in Denver.
Well, Denver and Chicago.
In Chicago.
Yeah.
Yeah, and you go to Chicago for 1 year, and you're a teammate of Scott Mays, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. That had to be good to be reunited.
It was. It was great to be reunited, but it was just odd because I was a starter and he was coming off the bench.
Yeah.
And, every coach, and Jerry Sloan was the coach.
Oh, okay.
Jerry Sloan was the coach. And Jerry Sloan is a defensive guy.
So he liked you.
Yeah. And I came in right away, with the attitude, to come to start. I'm coming to get traded to, I was a free agent. So
I came in. And you signed a free agent contract with Cleveland.
From Chicago. But I came in. Denver traded me because I think Doug Moe came in to Denver. Larry Brown quit. He was our coach.
Okay.
And we had a great team with Dan Issel and Bobby Jones and all of us for 3 years. David Thompson,
yeah.
We had a great team. And Larry Brown quit.
Yeah.
He just quit on us.
That's right. That's right. And Donnie Walsh, I think, took over for him as the coach. Yeah.
Yeah. And so that's how, me and Donnie have always been friends. And Larry quit on us, and then I went to he traded me because I went to camp. I told Doug Moe, you're not going to cuss me. You're not going to disrespect me. I'm not having that. You're not going to call me anything but the child of God, and then I'm going to take it because I'm on this team. That's not going to happen.
Yeah. But you had taken it in college.
Yeah, but I wasn't getting paid then either.
Yeah. And you're more of an adult now, so you weren't going to take it anymore.
And I think as an adult, you treat people how you want to be treated, and I just would not tolerate that.
Yeah.
I can take, you upset or whatever, but at the end of the day, we're all grown men.
Yeah.
And I wasn't going to take that. And he traded me because you're not going to abuse me. I'm not, this is not slavery. I'm not a dog.
Yeah.
And I refuse to, that's just personal.
Yeah.
For me. And so he traded me to Chicago, and it was a great thing. We had a great team in Chicago.
Yeah.
With Artis Gilmore and those guys.
And you're there for 1 year, and then you're a free agent, right? And if I remember right, you signed a really good contract with Cleveland. That's when Ted Stepien was the owner.
Yeah.
And can you tell us what that contract was about? This is like 1982 or something like that. Yeah.
Yeah, it was the thing I signed, James Edwards.
From the Pacers.
World Be Free.
Yeah.
We all signed as free agents. It was a great contract, not compared to what they get today, but at that time it was a good contract.
Wasn't it something like $700,000 or something? Some number sticks in my head. I don't know why that one, but actually that's what James Edwards signed for.
Yeah, he signed for it. I signed for a little less than that, but it was a great deal. But at the same time, the organization was just,
it was a disaster.
And I was so frustrated the whole time.
Yeah,
it was frustrating because there was no structure, there was no discipline, there was, you know, and that the first couple of years, you know, it was hard. I hated losing. But and then it got to the point where, you know what, I can't deal with this. I've seen some of everything in Cleveland.
Can you give me a story of what summarized the Cleveland Cavaliers of that era?
Chaos.
Yeah.
It was chaos.
What kind of things were guys getting? You don't have to mention names. What kind of things were
drugs.
Guys?
It was
a lot of drugs.
Drugs, alcohol. It was, I'd never forget running a fast break, and World Be Free was bringing it in the middle, and I was open. I'm running the wing. I'm open. He took a three.
On a fast break.
And I ran right up into on the bench, sat down. I said, that's it.
You took yourself out of the game.
I took myself out. And, you know, this just, you know, allowing one guy to do whatever and no control. And, you know, it's not team basketball. And
right.
I was done at that point. The love for the game had just stopped.
Yeah. Well, I was going to ask, because you retired in 1983. You've been in the league, what, 7 years?
7 years. And I had 2 more years on my contract.
And you left.
Yeah, and I was glad they waived me, and I was, thank you, because I was getting paid for those 2 years that I wasn't there. And so
so you did get paid for those final 2 years. Well, that's nice. But did you think about trying to catch on with another team?
No.
Your love of the game had been drained away?
It had been drained, and then Coach Knight called me. Phoenix wanted to pick me up, but they wanted me to take a pay cut. And I'm like, Coach, why would I take a pay cut when I can get paid and do nothing?
Yeah,
I don't want to play by any means necessary. See, that was not. I've never. Once I decided that I've had enough. To me, the lifestyle is not my lifestyle.
Yeah,
you know, I enjoyed it while I played. Had a great career, but I enjoyed working with kids and working with you know. I wanted to live in a community. If they offered me to coach or do something in the NBA, I would not do it because that's not. I don't need the stars. I don't need the lights. I don't need.
Yeah.
That's not me.
You have your degree, right? From IU. When did you get it?
I have a bachelor in kinesiology. Yeah. I got it years later.
Yeah.
I only had one class to finish up, and Knight stayed on me, so I had to go get it because he just stayed on me. He called. When are you bringing? He'd say some other words. When are you bringing to finish up? So I went back to Bloomington to finish up that one class, and I got my degree.
What year was that?
I don't even know. I think it was. I forget when it was. I think it was in the early 90s.
Early 90s, because for a long time, I think you
I was the
been,
only one.
You're the only one. Yeah. And I had the impression you kind of liked that.
I did.
I thought you did. You kind of liked being the individual, the one guy who didn't have
and
the
and he stayed on me because, you know, it was like messing with him. And I was like, coach, I'll get around to it, you know, because I started college coaching and stuff. But he kept calling, and he had people call me. Tell Wilkerson he need to get his butt down here. And we were always good friends. So Knight, you know, he had the right to say whatever, you know. But at this point, you know, I'm a grown man. Okay, coach, yeah. All right.
So you went back to summer school to get it? Or?
Yeah, I went back one summer and took the class in Bloomington.
Was that kind of weird being that age and being back in Bloomington going to school again?
Nah, it wasn't really, you know. You know, I just went and finished up the class and had a good time. And
just needed the one class to get it.
Yeah, and I got it, and Coach Knight was happy. He was like, I said, yep, you can't talk about me no more. I gave him a lot of years, though. It was fun.
You've done a lot of things since you left basketball. Tell us what you're doing today.
Well, today, I you know, when the economy went bad, I had a border company, and I restructured my company. I have a company called the Wilkerson Group, and we have professional speaking. I do professional speaking, motivational speaking. I do a lot with young people at risk. That's my passion, and dealing with a lot of at-risk kids. We have a company that does that, and Jerry Macon, a friend of mine, is the director of that group. Also, I do bottled water. I have a bottled water manufacturing company.
Mm-hmm.
And the person that's ran out of the Maryland area, and the person who director who's running that is Melvin Forbes. And we do private label, and we do also we have our own brand. I have Wilkerson Sports H2O. We have that.
Where does the water come from that you're selling?
Spring. We do spring water.
And where do you sell it? All over the world or just?
We do a lot of international. We do a lot of private labeling. For example, birthday parties, graduation parties.
Okay. Like a family name or whatever.
Small businesses.
Yeah.
You know, that sort of thing. Events, you know, event planners. We go and a lot of times for birthdays, special events, they want their own name and label. Everybody's vain. So that kind of works out. And plus water is the only thing that you must have.
Yeah.
And just a matter of who you buy it from.
True. That's true. That's
so true. I enjoy it because there's always a shortage of water all over the world, of clean water. And and I think I knew that I was in the right business, especially after Hurricane Katrina and seeing a lot of the, the black families who were dying because they couldn't get the water. And I never wanted that to happen to anyone, let alone African Americans. And so I went into the water business.
So do you do a lot of basketball, either clinics or camps, that type of thing?
Yeah, I do a lot. Basketball. I deal with kids. I'm a basketball concierge. I take problems to a state of solution. So whatever problems they may have, and a lot of individual, sometimes people would pay me to do a lot of individual teaching because I can look and tell the kids what's wrong and show them how to fix it, you know, mm-hmm. and the mentality of, to be a guard. It takes a lot. It's not kids, you know, they're playing a lot of AU. I never liked AAU. I never approved of it, even when I coached at Northwest. I never let any of my kids play AAU at Northwest High School. And I don't know if you know Rodney Carney.
That's one of the reasons he was kind of unknown, relatively speaking, because he hadn't done AAU.
And the reason I didn't let him play because I trained him in the summer. We conditioned, and I had fundamental camps at the school, and I was there all summer, and I worked them, and we trained, and we conditioned. And because if you play AAU, you don't have time to train. Yeah. You're just playing games. So those who don't play AAU, they get a chance to really grow if they're really working on their craft. So that's my thing, just to bless kids.
One-on-One with Bobby Wilkerson continues in a moment. And you might want to get a pen ready to write down some information. Welcome back to One-on-One. I'm Mark Monteith. Hey, thanks to Bobby Wilkerson for stopping by the One-on-One studios. You know, I'd talked to him a few times in recent years, but I don't think I'd seen him since his rookie year with the Seattle Supersonics. That defiant afro has been replaced by a shaved head, but otherwise, he looks pretty much the same as he did at IU. He's keeping fit, and he's keeping busy, too. And in fact, here's a couple of phone numbers in case you want to do business with him. If you want him as a motivational speaker, call 317-480-2949. That's 317-480-2949. And if you want to talk bottled water with him, the number is 202-438-8097. That's 202-438-8097. And of course, if you want to hear this or any of the other One-on-One episodes, go to the website at 1070thefan.com. Click on shows, click on weekly shows, and click on the One-on-One podcast link, and they're all there for you, 24 hours a day. You can reach me by email at mark@1070thefan.com, and feel free to follow me on Twitter, at Mark Monteith. And of course, I'll be back next week with yet another spine-tingling conversation with an Indiana sports personality, right here on 1070 The Fan.